Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ saṅghaṃ namassāmi. So I wasn't sure what the Dhamma reflection or what our Dhamma exploration might be today, but thought it would probably stem from the wise speech work that we've been studying recently, I, Ahimsa and I, through Orin J. Sofer's class based on nonviolent communications. Am I speaking loudly enough?
Maria
says no. Okay.
Why don't you come somewhere closer?
And I will also try to pick the voice up a little bit.
And also in future we have a little microphone thing. We can take it out if we want.
Yes. Experimenting with this space, and we'll see what's needed for it. It's nice to have Dhamma outside in our new Dhamma pavilion.
Once all obstacles have been overcome.
Once all obstacles have been overcome. So when I was reflecting on nonviolent communications, a lot of us get caught up in that nonviolent communication seems to have this formula, and following the formula can feel stilted, that the communications part is lost because we're so caught in the template, when you... I felt, then making,
because I need,
could you please, this request. And there is something powerful in templates. There is something that helps us to shape, and slow down into a form. I mean, we're living templates right here with our robes and our shaved heads and our four noble thises, our eightfold thats, and our we're really trying to live a template, but a template that we just pick up as a formula is not what the Buddha was advising. So as I began to really work with nonviolent communication, what I really came to was communication that's nonviolent is from a nonviolent heart. That's right. That the communication that is really meeting those needs, that the communication that is able to show up authentically is coming from a nonviolent heart. And for me, on the path, when we're talking about the Eightfold Path, that really goes to intention. And in the course, there were some technical terms parsing out intention versus purpose and other words that it can be really valuable, just like in the Pali, for us to dissect these components. But I found it really helpful to go back to right intention from the Eightfold Path. So if our goal is nonviolent communication, nonviolent life, nonviolence, so that we're walking a path that leads to peace, to liberation, then the cultivation of that nonviolence, that safeness, that connection, I think really in the heart, really comes from deeply practicing the right intention. And right intention has these three components to it. It's in the Pali, it's sama, sankappa, and let's see here. Sama. What are people's favorite words for sama?
My favorite is attuned.
Attuned. I like that one. So, right is the common one, but or
sound.
Sound.
Like a sound decision.
A sound.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes wise.
Wise. Mm-hmm.
In harmony.
In harmony. Yeah. One of them I like is aligned. You know, so I think several were pulling out that quality. And then sankappa, is thought or intention, but what other words are?
Motivation.
How about attention? Aspiration is the one that really resonates for me. So we could be talking about an aligned aspiration. So if we're our wise intention, our noble thoughts, our aligned aspiration, that those are qualities to me that lead to a wise speech, a nonviolent communication. And the qualities within sama sankappa, we've got, let's see here. Sama sankappa, ne kamma sankappa, intention of renunciation free from craving. Avyapada sankappa, intention of goodwill free from aversion. Avihingsa sankappa, intention of compassion free from cruelty. And these intention of renunciation free from craving, intention of goodwill free from aversion, intention of compassion free from cruelty, these are from Bhante Gunaratna's way of expounding on this particular factor of the path. And I pulled out some qualities, the qualities of the heart, of intention, that work for me when I'm leading into right speech or wise speech or aligned or in speech that's in harmony. I think that's a really great one. You know, if we have sama, aligned, in harmony, sound. So nekama, that renunciation, it has a characteristic of calm. So if I have a nonviolent heart, it's really coming from calm. It's coming from a place that's, looking at some of the other factors, that stillness. You know, that stillness is informing my intention. So this characteristic of calm. The avyapada, good-heartedness, that's the characteristic of kindness. And really, this was a thing that was really coming out in the wise speech course, is that the quality of your speech. Dhammadipa, do you remember from the book that you loaned me on? What is the tone? Tone percent. Your speech, the words that you say, is really...
And the tone is like 65%.
No, I think it was 30-something.
38.
30, that, yeah. Yeah, that sounds right.
30. That was something else was 60, and then the tone was 38.
And then the body language.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. And the words were like...
Are you familiar with this?
The least.
You know, the,
when I'm not familiar with that, but I'm familiar with what you're speaking about, how tone, body language, facial expression mm-hmm. is all part of the communication. Mm-hmm. And you're just listening to someone's voice at times. It's like, you're okay, something just happened there that sometimes the person doesn't even know.
Right.
If someone says to Rick, your voice just changed. I'm like, no, it didn't.
Yeah, exactly. I have a recollection of a conversation I had with someone on an internet phone line, so not great quality, and we were talking about something that was a little bit vulnerable, and he was just listening so carefully, and he said, "What just happened in your body?" And I had to like come back into the body to notice, and he said, "I just noticed your voice went up." Oh, I noticed your voice went up, and I'm wondering if you may have hunched your shoulders. And I'm wondering, so he was just asking these from an internet phone connection from the forest that was not great. But he was able to pick up not the words so much I was saying, because he didn't comment on my words. He commented and asked what was, and he was asking me, inviting me to come back into the body. Oh, and so that's what I'm talking about with the wise speech, the nonviolent communications. It has to come from a nonviolent heart. And for the heart to be nonviolent, you have to be in it. You have to be present with it. You have to be alive with it. And this kindness, this characteristic of kindness, I think, comes from that place. And then, of course, I mean, right there, the Abhimsa, that's the non-harm, so non-violence. And the characteristic there for me is gentleness. Now, this doesn't mean necessarily that your speech may not be strong, but your heart is gentle. And so your body language is going to convey something safe, that you're speaking from a place that's inviting and safe, and the qualities that you're holding in the conversation more than your words are coming from that place of a nonviolent heart. The other thing that we're learning in this class is it's not easy. And it's not the formula per se that's not easy, the these tools that we're learning. It's really not easy to speak from such an embodied place. Someone might have to help me with this quote too. I think it's James Joyce. He's got a particular character and he says, "Mr. So-and-so lives a short distance from his body."
Yeah.
Yes. I don't remember the name of the character, but but how often are we just like that? That we're living a short distance from our body and we're speaking a long distance from our body. We talk about people who say everything that comes into, they say what they think, but they say everything that comes into their head. That's not an embodied speaking. And I think that when we are practicing this embodiment, then the nonviolence is what we're cultivating. Because who wants to live in a violent place? Now, the world is full of that, and people are really more and more disembodied if they are in a violent place, because they can't abide in that unless their heart is really able to hold it. So, how do we get into this kind of dissociated, this disconnected, this out of alignment, this not in harmony space? We get there because we have a human experience. I don't think any of us have come to this point in our life trauma-free. There's another a neurologist, Robert Scar. He calls it dissociative capsules, that we live in dissociative capsules, and that's resulting from large and small traumas. So this is why we don't want to necessarily be here. So the work that we have to do to get to right speech, why right speech is not, or this wise speech, this in harmony speech, the distance from where we have come to be conditioned and where we need to be on a liberated path is not small. And the way to get there, we were talking last week in the Right Understanding chapter, we were talking about the factors that run and circle around the other factors of the path. So you've got your right view, your right effort, and your right mindfulness. And so these factors, and for me, the right, when we put right speech in the middle of that, you know, right view, when we're talking about the right view on the mundane level of comma, and our experience and what comes of our experience, that again for me is a really embodied thing. You know, right view is an embodied view. Right effort, how do I know if I'm picking up something that's wholesome or something that's unwholesome? I feel it. I feel it in the body. Mm. Now, right mindfulness, well, okay, maybe I should have started there with the right mindfulness, because mindfulness, even though it's got the word mind in it, if you're experiencing something, you are really experiencing it in the body. The mind is discursing, or now if we're in meditation, it may be in another state, but when we're talking about it running and supporting our speech, the qualities of my mind are known in my body. So for me, I know this is rambling a little bit, but I'm trying to set the stage for us to maybe unpack this a little bit, of this nonviolent communication coming from a nonviolent heart. So to cultivate that, I want to cultivate these path factors in a way that's going to lead to a safe, a calm, a kind, right-intentioned interaction. So I don't want to spend a whole lot of time just spinning in my own head here, or in my own speech. I want to open it up. Ayasuchita from Damadrini, she sent me something today that was from one of her reflections, her morning reflections, and she was talking about how important it is to be living with or from the heart. And for her, what she was saying was that someone who lives in this way would be honest and upright, straightforward. Their words and actions are consistent. This practice is connected with the Noble Eightfold Path. And when you live with a heart, the practice is not capricious and you are not fickle. So I just want to bring that into the mix too for us to tease out. you know, one of the things I think that when we're talking about a disrupted or a violent or a conversation that feels like I need to be guarded in it, I think it's partly because we're either expecting something from a pattern. We're not present with actually the conversation we're having now. We're present with past conversations. And when someone seems to be following these formulas, we're not yet trusting it. So the capricious is given to sudden and unaccountable changes of mood or behavior. And fickle is changing frequently especially as regarding one's loyalties, interests, and affections. So these two qualities that she was calling out to me were prime examples of where the heart is not in a nonviolent state, it's not in an embodied state. So what I'd like to open up for is a conversation about what is it to nonviolent communications. Am I on track here with looking at it as a nonviolent heart? And also, what are the characteristics of such a heart that leads us to wise speech? So it's not so much that I want to talk about wise speech, but the factors that we need to cultivate to put even approach that factor of the path in a really wise way. Please, we'll take a moment and then feel free to speak into the conversation space, the Dhamma exploration.
It definitely feels on track to me, what you're saying, very much. That, you know, to start at speech, in a way, actually, when we've been, as we've been looking at the whole thing around speech, I've noticed that on the occasions when I'm clear and mindful around speech, which isn't always, that there might be a sort of wanting to say something and then recognizing, like, no, that's not the right time, or that's not helpful, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then it immediately takes me back to what's motivating that speech. And often it's a mind state that I'm not very aware of.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it's grumbling. I didn't know that I was a grumbler, but there's this kind of grumbling mind state. And then it's like, oh, that what I wanted to say was coming from a kind of a grumbling mind state.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't necessarily see it until I stop the speech.
Mm.
And then it's like, okay, well, what else, you know, what else could there be in the mind than this? And for me, actually, with the Samasankhapa, the word thought is really helpful, right? Mm. Like, attune thought. I appreciate thought because that's what it is for me. It's like, what thoughts are in the mind? And it's like, are they thoughts of greed or aversion or, you know,
mm-hmm.
hatefulness or, you know, wanting to harm. It's not usually wanting to harm. It's not usually hateful, but there might be greed and aversion. And then recognizing, like, oh, we can do this. There's ways of turning it around.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's so clear with those three kinds of thought, which really, that word is helpful. So, I feel resonant with what you're saying, and I'm sort of just recognizing that I get to it at the moment through this sort of stepping, like, backtracking way, and then remembering the teachings, and then generally when I, if I put the mind into a different gear, I might not need to say anything.
Yeah, and I hear you calling out exactly these things of the motivation, so that's your intention. And so there's the pause, there's the mindful pause, there's the motivation, and then it's the noticing that you maybe aren't in touch with when you question, well, where's my motivation, what's my thought that's driving this, and then that encourages you to become more embodied in order to know, well, where am I coming from? And then only then can you start to walk the path factors toward a wise, attuned speech. Mm-hmm. And you may make a different choice than you would have if you hadn't taken that mindful pause.
Yes. Absolutely.
Yeah. Thank you.
Kind of think that it might go both directions, so that maybe your heart is who knows what it is, but if you get in touch with your needs and express them, then your heart can start to develop to be peaceful, loving heart.
Mm-hmm. Can you say more about, like, an example where the speech helps you to, because I think what you're saying is absolutely on, is that these factors go around each other.
Well, if you try to figure out what your needs are, that you have to be mindful, and then you might find, and then you find out, oh, I'm upset about this because I need this and I'm not getting this. And then the few times I've done it, when I've done that little formula, I was like, oh, I'm no longer resentful. It doesn't matter if they do my request or not, because I've expressed what I needed, and now I'm not resentful. So I don't know how that works with the, where needs would fit in the Eightfold Path.
Well, I think you're speaking still about, you're not saying that you're just going to jump into speaking. You're saying that you're going inside, and you're using your mindfulness. And I think that when you're assessing that need, that's an embodied experience for you to get in touch with what is my need. At least for me, you know, it's like what's going on in my belly is going to tell me a lot about what it is that I'm, it's like, and so identifying it isn't just a thinking process. It's a showing up process with all of these faculties. And so I hear you getting to wise speech through applying the other factors, and that when you do that, it also helps, should I say, soften and strengthen, like, your intention and your view, shift your view, is that?
It shifts the view.
Shifts the view.
And David Roche, is it? An adult never goes to bed you don't go to take resentments to bed. I mean, you resolve. An adult doesn't keep resentments. It's like, whoa, ever. So that's a pretty big.
And sometimes that is through speech when we talk it out. And sometimes it is that internal mindfulness of my own understanding of the experience, and holding that resentment is actually not aligned with my intentions and with my view, my right view, when I'm really understanding. So right speech, noble speech, in harmony speech, to me is not always an external thing. You know, sometimes it's a internal process. And that, I really am, the non-violence, the harmlessness, maybe harmlessness might sit, if I use that term, that harmlessness, that aspiration really, really helps me when I'm doing my internal speaking and trying to walk that factor of the path with my internal conversation. So thank you, Anagarga Janice.
There's a beautiful passage in the Bible. So don't let the sun go down on your anger.
Don't let the sun go down
on your,
on your anger. Yeah, I think that's exactly saying what Anagarga
I think, it sometimes seems extremely difficult, but actually having a conversation is so awesome. I mean, you know, like to, like, okay, I'm going to try that. And not having a conversation, I feel like it doesn't move. But having a conversation, mm-hmm. it has opportunity to move.
Yeah, yeah. And we've been experiencing that in the classes. It's not even necessarily having a conversation with the person where you're having some sort of difficulty. It's like having a pre-conversation in order to help one go through the other steps, that to help one get embodied, you know, to have somebody help you notice that, like the guy on the call did for me. Now, he noticed the change of tone in my voice. He knew enough about what the body would be doing in order for the voice to have changed mm-hmm. in that way. And he was able to help me be more embodied in my experience mm-hmm. of what I was speaking. Mm-hmm. How is this for you?
Oh, no, thank you very much. This is actually what I've been working on. It's like, oh, she's going to talk about what I've really been working on lately.
Great,
and
share.
There's so many threads to it mm-hmm. that are wonderful. And part of it I want to say, so you're saying I should not be watching CNN and MSNBC right before I go to bed. That's been a tough one for me because these are things that I have interest mm-hmm. in. If I'm holding the space for others in the world, part of for me is how do I hold this stuff and hear it and hold it and allow mm-hmm. for my own hearing the hurt and the pain. So kind of going to something you're saying, I have to hear my own anger. Mm-hmm. I have to hear my mm-hmm. own confusion. I have to hear mm-hmm. my own grief. Mm-hmm. And that is a bodily feeling.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's bringing it, not thinking about it, noticing, mm-hmm. oh, this mm-hmm. is how it wants to be expressed.
Yeah.
And so giving it room mm-hmm. to express itself, and then there's the calming.
Right.
So this mm-hmm. is all, so it's really wonderful to me, all mm-hmm. the threads mm-hmm. that I'm doing and working and learning from it. And it opens up to looking at what's the shadow that I'm not seeing. Mm-hmm. Why am I speaking this? What's the shadow? So it goes to shadow work, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Which I've also been working on lately. Mm-hmm. You know, been doing, I think the Dharma is that, but something mm-hmm. that I'm doing is mm-hmm. also looking at the shadow. And mm-hmm. another piece that I resonate when you talk, which I think in our Western culture, we often miss, we think the brain, and then we go, oh, mind, brain. But the brain is the whole body. Mm-hmm. And so if the mind is infusing itself in the whole body, in the brain, and awareness of that, it has to be awareness of the whole body mm-hmm. and everything that's going on. So that's mm-hmm. kind of something that I continually factor that I'm coming back to for mm-hmm. myself and in the work that I do. Yeah. Because I do this work of having to watch people and listen to people. And how easily, at times when I'm not in that realm of that coat, that hat that I put on, mm-hmm. and then you have to watch it with friends and family because you're not always in that. And mm-hmm. and the biggest thing that I've been looking at wondering for years, in order to know right speech, I have to understand wise listening. Mm-hmm. It's the whole crux of, for me, mm-hmm. where wise speech, you know, where I'm going to go with speech is I have to understand. So I have to become the contemplative listener.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to stop you there and then we can pick up again.
Can I just do one quick thing? You said the brain is the whole body?
Yeah, if you ask a neuroscientist, they will say to you,
yes,
the brain is the whole body because it's all information. This is
the nervous system.
Like a junction box.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But the brain is all that information that is being picked up, which is why you can watch someone when they're talking, because mm-hmm. their whole system is moving or doing mm-hmm. something, inflections in voice. Yeah. You can watch someone's eyes slightly mm-hmm. change, and you can just see, oh, there is grief there, and they're talking yeah. right past it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So what I'm understanding is that you said you want to be able to hold space for the things that are in for people with the things that are happening in the world. And you said that, you know, and I heard that you needed to see CNN or these other things to be informed. Is that
fair? Well, I don't need to.
But you don't need to necessarily do it before bed.
Yeah, but it's like, you know, part of me, what's happening? What happened?
Right.
What's happened today?
Right.
That's new. And,
right.
And you have to know when. So Rick, will
right.
you stop already? You're making yourself really miserable. Mm-hmm. But how to also do it, and it's interesting because I'm also living by myself. So there's that interesting of the connection of how my mind's trying to work with what's happening in our country and everything
yeah.
today. So there's, you know, so many pieces.
So I'd like to unpack it a little bit.
Yeah, sure.
So you're bringing in the information. And then it's also when you look into how is this impacting me, and you look at the full nervous system, and it starts to bring out things and experiences in you, and you see this what we call the shadow side, and then that becomes a rich area for practice. I think that's really spot on as far as like looking into all of the factors of the path. Within our experience, and I think we've already agreed that you need the space to do that processing, and so it's not right before bed, but let's just say it's in the right space. You've taken that input in, you've taken in CNN, you've taken in these other news feeds, and your intention is to be a space holder for people to be able to. Engage with that world in a wholesome way, and you're doing that by being able to also see how they're interacting with the world. So the part I want to unpack is let's see if I hopefully I didn't lose it. It was rich. Oh, yes. So I am making a guess here that when you talk about being a space holder, that is something that you want to be doing out of a really embodied, grounded, able to notice things without being reactive in yourself. So that's why you're doing your own work. And so the cultivation, that's what I want to get at, is what is the cultivation that's going on before you have the conversation, before you're in the space where you're actually reading their body language? What is it that you're cultivating in your heart or in your experience?
Well, no, good question. To help someone unfold something in themselves that they may not have been able to see.
Mm-hmm.
That can't, it's hard for that to happen when I'm putting my stuff on them.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I have to know how to tease that apart. What am I recognizing, resonating with, noticing versus my stuff?
Mm-hmm.
Or does it resonate with something that I've learned in my stuff? And
yeah.
I'm sharing it with them mm-hmm. as a possible place to move through it
mm-hmm.
and how to hold them in places mm-hmm. where they've not been able to be in their body
mm-hmm.
and to, you know, to be able to go there. So it has a lot of threads.
Mm-hmm.
It gets
yeah.
to that, you know. And one of the biggest pieces that I, to me, I'm still working on it, it's very, you know, learn how to listen better, be quiet, Rick, you know, come from just family not being heard, how that plays into it, then
mm-hmm.
the family that was loud and heard, and it's like, oh my gosh, how did we even survive? And to recognize that whatever anybody is saying has nothing to do with me, it's their interpretation
mm-hmm.
of what they're seeing and what they're
mm-hmm.
hearing from me and interpreting their life. Ultimately for me is, how do I listen that it's nothing about me?
Mm-hmm.
It's really all them. And that when I can find that space,
mm-hmm.
and even with my own self, to be able to watch all this, it's not about me. It's just this little animal you know, that's caught in its pain and nervous system, and it's altering when I can recognize, no matter what anybody says, you're just telling me what's going on with you, how you're interpreting me, and the reality is you have no clue really deeply what's going on inside me. Even though I can read you, and that person could read you, because they could hear things, but ultimately what was attached to your voice change,
right,
they have no clue about. And that's the, to me, the Dharma is moving into that space to see what I don't know, which creates a space of emptiness. And it's one of the hardest things. And I want to, and I have a question. And tell me if I'm, when the Buddha was talking about, as we're moving towards liberation, one of the last things is speech. Am I correct on that? I think one of the last things that gets changed is speech, or no? I've misunderstood.
No, conceit. Conceit,
yeah.
You know?
Conceit.
Of the self.
And where's speech? Is speech somewhere towards the end of that, or have I, like, misheard that and been making it up in my own head?
No, you speak about the 10 fetters, you know, and people are often surprised to hear that the last three are like conceit, restlessness, and ignorance, and that expresses itself in speech in some way.
I think that speech is going to be a real telltale of where you are in that.
You figured out why I heard it that way, because those three things come out in our speech, and that's the place, that's why I, you know, it's such a wonderful talk, and glad that, you know, I showed up for that. It's like, man, this is what I'm working on. Okay.
And the last thing that I, when you, I'm, earlier today I was in a conversation where they brought up this thing about they wanted to be, you know, able to hold space for others and be able to do this work. And they were concerned about how it was really that they were just getting so tired, and you know, and I think what you're getting at of you really have to show up, number one, and you have to have done the work and know what's me, what's not me, what's not me.
Yeah, and then there's no tiredness. And then there's no work. It's just that you said the heart is just
right
there, and it's like, and it was something I think you were saying, Anandaba. It's like sometimes the right speech is the non, you know, the most effective is that non-speech, and you know, I had to really work with understanding that because of my, you know, history.
Earlier today I had responded that, you know, it's like when you're holding that space, it's, you're holding it with joy and happiness. And I think I would maybe correct myself that I, that's, it is true that, that there is this, like, nurturing joy when we're really aligned and in tune and in harmony and embodied. But I think maybe it goes back to the calm, the gentle, and the kind, that's the space holding. And that also is not something that's tiring. That's something that's just what? Just
calm, gentle, and kind.
Just calm, gentle, and kind.
It's pleasant if that's happening.
Yeah.
I want to add, though, that for me, I think there's also a precursor, which was brought up part of what you were saying there, Rick, which is the recognition that when you say something, when someone says something that I have learned or have to learn or sometimes relearn, that if I said that, it would mean this. But you saying that doesn't necessarily mean this. That's the precursor to being able to say, right, so it's not even necessarily about me or your understanding of what's going on with me, but there is a dynamic of you expressing something that's going on for you, and my role in this, part of my role in the conversation, if I'm going to have an open heart to it and a skillful response and a patient enough response, is to start from the perspective of some curiosity. Well, when when you express yourself like that, then what does that mean for you?
Yes. Right?
Because I think I might know already what that means, but I most likely do not, because there's just a different, you know, a whole different life's experience and embodied experience behind that, you know.
Mm-hmm. So for me, the one of the very, very fundamental practices to write speech is that kind of curiosity around meaning and eliciting that and leaving and having the patience for that, because it takes time. It takes time to be willing to engage with people from that perspective instead of that kind of, oh, I know what you're talking about, and respond, mm-hmm. you know, or react.
Mm. Yeah. The curiosity, and in the course we were talking, it was curiosity and care. Mm-hmm. And I feel that quality mm-hmm. in what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. And also from what you were saying, it's not just curiosity because I'm, you know, I just want to fill my head with, you know, more stuff. It's curiosity because my heart is moved to really show up.
Right. To try to meet you.
To meet.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a harmony. That's for me the word harmony has worked. Is doing a practice this week with something that I was doing, and was trying to bring in sameness and difference, using those as how to work with. And what does it feel like when you in the sameness, and what's it like when you're in difference? And it was just like everyone kind of sharing and then unpacking it and looking at that. The sameness feels nice, and yet I don't want to be same because I want my difference. I want to feel different at times. And yet sameness can feel very safe. Mm-hmm. And yet it can feel bland. Mm-hmm. So it's really interesting. And then difference, if I'm always in difference, we can't even connect. But if we find, you know, so it's just kind of playing with it. Those things that I think also become in part of all this. I mean, mm-hmm. there's so many threads. And I think with something, maybe you said timeliness is so key in right speech. I'm like, wow, it can just 5 seconds difference even can make a difference on when you, how it can turn out.
And of those four aspects of wise speech that the Buddha lays out, you know, both truthful and helpful and kind and timely, Oren in the class has expanded timely to include this term I had never heard before, but was aware of the concept, social location, that you're very aware of the power. You know, that I'm a woman and I'm speaking to a room full of men, or, you know, I'm white and I'm speaking to a person of color, that, or this is my manager, or I'm the boss. That you're very aware when you go to speak or address something of your social location, which I think is a valid expansion of timely, very valid. Mm-hmm. And really, really pertinent for our times.
Doesn't that go with the word to be in Concord? With others knowing exactly what you're saying. If I want to be in Concord with others, I have to do exactly what you're saying. I have to have that whole awareness.
Context.
Of what's going on to create that togetherness. Mm-hmm.
And also, you know, there's many languages, especially for example, Thai, I know it's like that, and but also other languages who have that built in, you know?
Right, exactly.
There are so many different pronouns,
Right.
It's all very clear, you know, exactly, you know, what you think that person is in relationship to you.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
In Spanish as well, in Japanese as well.
And in German a little, you know, English is just very weak in that there's nothing, you know? In German, at least, you have you have the polite version of you and the you. And in Thai, you have seven different ones.
In Japanese also, you have five or six different layers.
Yeah, and right there, that's going to place, your speech is going to place you in the social structure. I want to get back to the social structures where you're talking about the same and the difference As we are in relationship and we're in community and we're in the world, how we hold same and how we hold different also has to be coming out of the path factors. That it has to have the awareness, oh, this person, as you said, or as Venerable Dhammadeva said about the same sentence from a different person, from a different space in our social dynamic, can have a very, very different landing for someone in another position in that same social structure. Mm-hmm. And they will be offended if it comes from this person in this spot in the social structure, and not offended if it comes from this person in the social structure. Mm-hmm. And all of that, that's why when we look at, this is really hard. This is really hard. And it takes the whole path, all of these factors, for us to get to it. And I want to get to the same and the difference, and how do we hold it with the right intention, with this gentle, this calm, this kind, that it helps to inform how we're speaking, but it doesn't create a cemented structure. Because I think what we're trying to do by our awareness is to begin to shift the social dynamic, is to begin to acknowledge the power structure, not to set it into concrete. White man on top, just as we don't want to cement that. We want to notice and then respect the discomfort.
Well, that's what, that when we can find that sameness, then it's like that oak can be curious about the differences and know we're learning. And something that I go on, and this is the first time hearing this in an Analyo retreat with what you just say. I often do, when I'm doing body reflection, I start with bones, fleshy parts, and skin sitting here. Mm-hmm. And I just love that. It's a quick way of doing the 32 body parts, bone, fleshy part, and skin. And what you are saying is, if we can be in a dynamic, and I'm, quote, the power white male, if we get here and you could say, all we are is bones, fleshy parts, and skin, mm-hmm. then I'm going to, and I really agree with that, I will have to see my discomfort,
right,
of the male thinking, well, wait a minute, I know I'm a little superior, whatever that means. It's like, okay, so get someone into sameness to see how irrational then that other difference that I'm bringing into it makes no sense whatsoever, and my ability to hold that mm-hmm. discomfort so it can have the change through the sharing of speech.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that makes any sense.
So you're saying that when you look at the other people that you're in community with as this structure of bones covered with goop that's held in by skin, it dismantles some of that hierarchy that our culture has baked into us. And so when you're just coming at it as, I am this embodiment with other embodiments, it also takes maybe some of the discomfort out because it's no longer so personal. Is that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm still, I'm just kind of continuously playing with. And let me ask you, I would love to ask this question, because sometimes when I've said that and I've done, like, I've gone through the body, I feel bones. I just see the bones image and I sit with it. And I see, and then I come back up putting skin and nervous system and muscles around it. And then I remember sitting there, and then I put, then I put the skin. And I go, identity. Oh, my God. Ego and identity when the skin comes on. And it just, like, holy cow.
Mm-hmm. Because you're... Because
the skin, that's, we see each other, the skin comes on, then there's the identity, then there's all the egoic structures, our past, our mm-hmm. history, and it comes, and it just, I mean, that's what arose for me one time sitting. I don't know, because I know you've sat with Analia. Mm-hmm. That's what I took from that one sitting with the skin. I go, holy cow, there's Rick all of a sudden as I'm coming down the skin. Rick showed up. Rick, he wasn't there with the bones and the organs and the fleshy parts and the blood until the skin came on.
So your identity formed, your identity consciousness, conceit.
Yeah, yeah.
It was, view.
View. Your identity view. Yeah.
And I go, it's like, exactly. Oh my God, that's what, I think I'm doing it, and others then must be doing it, you know, if that's what I'm learning here. I don't know if you want to share more on that.
It's funny, because for me, we're doing the corpse contemplation, actually, you know, because he also does that, I mean, then it's in the Satipatthana, where you see that the body's died, and then it's, and it goes through these different layers of decomposure, and, you know, and what I found was, all the way through the body's decomposing, and then it's going through this bloated stage, and it goes through this, you know, the animals are eating it, and then there's just like bones with bits of flesh, and then bones held together with sinews, all the way through there. There was still some sense of identification, which is kind of amazing. And it was only when it was
bones separate
that it was like, okay, now I can't hold that together. It was that far, you know, and it's like, wow. Even with the animals eating, I was like, yeah, this is great. The animals can eat my body, offering it back to. And there's some sort of identification there.
Yeah.
Until the bones were scattered, and it was like, then I couldn't. It was like, no, the mind couldn't somehow hold on to anything. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
I just like the. Like just the flesh rotting, the fly around it. That's how where I go there.
And that helps with the pulling the identity out, or I'm not. What is it that it helps you to see?
Are you familiar with this practice?
I've heard of it.
Heard of it. Yeah. You may meet it a little bit now here with us. You may have a little more contact with it now you're here with us.
Oh yeah. I think I'm going to hear a lot. You guys really know how to think.
I'm not sure about that.
We're aiming for noble, right thought.
That's a big matzo ball out there.
Yeah, and that's why we're discussing the whole package.
Matzo ball.
Yeah, I guess I just think it's kind of gross. I don't know where the identity plays into that, but then it's like, ew.
Okay, so it's, okay.
Gross. Well, I think, I mean, relevant to this conversation, just to get back a little bit, for me, in terms of the supports for right speech, it's like, is it an embodiment that's informing me? Is it an embodiment that's informing something about understanding response, understanding resonance, understanding reaction, right? Or is it an embodiment that is, you know, doing exactly this, like creating a sense of social location and identity and hierarchy and distance or sense of separation and so on, you know, to the extent that I can keep it informational, then I think it has less of that other baggage associated and actually is more useful and more accessible.
Yeah. I rarely think of embodiment. I rarely think of the skin when I'm thinking of embodiment. You know, I can see where the identity part comes in, and how we identify each other.
Yeah.
With, you know, it's like the outer packaging. You know, I'm not identified with your kidney, even though, you know, we've talked about it recently.
Trying to be nice to my kidney, okay.
however, I'm curious and caring and wanting to show up for the experience of having a kidney, you know, and so the embodiment is not about, now suddenly Venerable Dhammadipa is this being with a kidney, as we all are, or two, do we have two?
Thankfully,
two.
We have two.
Yeah, we got
most
two.
People. Most of us.
you know, it's not about counting my kidneys in my embodiment, it's about that curiosity and care and experiential
groundedness,
centeredness, something from which to hold the space and to relate, and to approach wise speech and to approach seeing clearly, without it being me. We are at 8:31 according to this clock, 8:32 according to that one.
That one's satellite controlled.
All right, we'll go with, we're already 2 minutes over then.
So I just have to say, I'm just going to be really scared to talk in the future.
Oh,
I'm just kidding. Oh. I'm just messing with you.
No, don't let it be so.
It's just a lot of thinking about what's going to come out. Like, if I have to think that hard before I say anything, then I don't think I can say anything.
But that gets back to the very beginning of the, it's not necessarily, I mean, we do call it right thought, but that's why I prefer right intention, actually, because of the I don't want it to be, gosh, I have to go through this whole process before.
Right, you started with that.
Right, and so it's so let's go back there. Let's go back to, what does my heart feel like when I want to make this statement? And that's the informing the movement. So it's just like, I'm here, I'm in this embodied experience. And because I'm aware, like Janice was talking about the getting in touch with the need, and the last thing that I had asked me to bring up was wait.
Mm-hmm. Yes, please.
Wait.
It's very good.
So one of the other things about speaking is the acronym WAIT. Why am I talking?
I've heard that one.
And you might go under it one more step of, what am I thinking? And I like that a little bit less, because I feel like it's more, what am I experiencing in this moment here and now? Now, that's going to inform, because what I'm, too often, what I think is what I say. And I think that we really want to slow that down. Mm-hmm. So it just check the heart and speak from there. And we hope to hear your voice.
Oh, you will.
I'm sure we will.
I'm sure we will.
So, thank you everyone for your contributions.
Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah. We really appreciate this bringing it up and everyone sharing. It's so important.
Lovely.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.